I have an interesting theory, and really it's based on the facts and the science, that there is an issue happening, especially with the season in regard to the masking and bacterial buildup that is causing bacterial pneumonia. And I mean, it seems like a basic conclusion to come to, but it's a big conspiracy theory today to even make such a claim. But I find if you have thoughts, go ahead.
Well, not my thoughts. They're the thoughts of Jim Meehan. I interviewed him on my podcast on Breaking Science. I'm sorry to interrupt, but Jim Meehan, MD, he said, if you mask all day long and you mask these kids all day long, they're going to get bacterial infections. Adults are going to get bacterial pneumonia. It's a given in medicine that that's going to happen.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant, independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Tuesday, February 16th, 2021. Thank you for joining me today, and we should be live on Rockfin as well. Apologies for the delay tonight for those that are on our Discord channel. It's incredible the things that go on behind the scenes before I get ready. It is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, for a long time now, I have not even been reporting on the censorship and the manipulation because that's long since obvious. But it took me 5-10 minutes just to get things to connect with DLive. Still can't get the Facebook thing to connect. It's just so interesting how this continues to happen. But we should be live on Rockfin now, as well as all the other platforms. And as always, these will be uploaded on the other platforms like Odyssey and BitChute once we're done. And again, the point is, if you're on YouTube, why? Why are you still at YouTube? But there's plenty of other places you could go. And trust me, I get your reasonings. But one day it will come and I will not be there anymore. And that won't be by choice. So make sure you take action now to circumvent that censorship that is absolutely coming your way without a shadow of a doubt. Now, this whole show today is really focused around one main point. And of course, as always, these points are connected with some of the other tangential points to this larger agenda. But I opened up with that clip in particular from Dr. James Lyon Weiler, PhD, and talking specifically about something that I've been circling around for a long time, not just masks in general. I think we've put to bed the discussion of the fact that there's no science, rather that the science says that these things work the way that they say that they do. And it's quite clear that at the very least, that's not the case, that it is completely undefined at this point. But there's a lot more we could get into, but specifically about bacterial pneumonia is something that I've really been driving home because it is a no-brainer. I mean, it's absolutely staggering, the kind of the way that these people will be staring the connection in the face and just completely recoil because, well, we're not supposed to say that because that's dangerous conspiracy theory. And someone like James Lyon Weiler has already shown you that he's willing to tell you the truth, regardless of whether it's become a no-no, you know, a taboo to talk about those obviously true things. But bigger than just bacterial pneumonia, we're going to walk through today a trail of investigation, research, information that will show you not only that bacterial pneumonia is obviously being potentially caused by wearing a mask for hours and hours a day, especially during the winter with lots of moisture, exactly like the random controlled trial from the British Medical Journal about cloth masks found exactly that they increase risk of infection. But we're going to also get into how it gets much broader than that and how inflammation from multiple points are causing, in my opinion, what is being called or possibly being called, let me say that again so it's clear, what in my opinion, that long-haul COVID is possibly ultimately being caused by the mask. My opinion, I think it's very clear that this is an obvious question, that if I, you know, as a researcher, as a detective, this is one of the most obvious connections I've seen in this discussion, as we see them reeling to just make connections that aren't there about what they deem long-haul COVID. And I'll even show you. And every time they talk about it, they go, well, we don't know what causes this stuff, but we think it's this. So they're assuming. But what it looks like when you stand back, the larger picture, is that there's things that are leading to inflammation, that are leading to extra illness, infections, that are causing all of these side effects, or at least can cause all of the side effects we're talking about. And then when you realize, well, there's no real connection between why they think it's COVID, and you can clearly draw the lines between all the stuff we're talking about, it begins to show a picture of them choosing to ignore what is likely causing at least some of this stuff, Maybe because they want this to look the way they think it should look, or maybe because there's a larger sinister agenda taking place here. But we're going to go through all of this and you can think it through and listen and add it up for yourself. To me, it seems quite clear. Now, I want to start off actually with a tweet from Sarah Abdallah. And this is, by the way, anybody out there that has contact with her, I would love to get her on the show. Since I was unjustly censored on Twitter with absolutely no justification or email or follow-up of any kind, I can't have contact with people that don't follow me now, which is a new thing they did, probably for this exact purpose. So you lose contact with these people that don't know you have a new account. And of course, when I try to open a new account under anything even remotely resembling The Last American Vagabond, instantly deleted, which makes no sense at all, especially since I did it from a different IP address and a different phone number. So clearly they just must have magically known it was me, but no, they just censored TLAV. But I'd like to have her on the show is the point. But here to start out with her tweet: in his first month, Joe Biden, bomb Somalia, is still waging war on Yemen, decided to continue the persecution of Julian Assange, built a new U.S. military base in Syria, the illegally occupied location, approved an $85 million Raytheon weapons deal for Chile, you know, the authoritarian dictatorship that it is right now, and Whitney can testify to that. The point is that ultimately $85 million that should have gone to Americans, people starving to death, people who can't get jobs. I mean, it's incredible the money that goes out for weapons while we can't ultimately, or I should take that back, actually. We're talking about a sale. Nonetheless, the point is that this is Chile buying weapons at a time when they should be doing things for their people. It's the same concept. Why the U.S. government is currently running around selling arms to authoritarian dictatorships while they should be taking care of you under the, you know, what they tell us they should be doing? It's just, it's up for you to decide. I mean, it shows you that military weapons are the focal point of what these governments all are all about. And right now, the war is pointed at you. And that's why all of this is happening domestically. But it says all that he does for the military-industrial complex. Which, by the way, if you just look down the information, it's really no different than Donald Trump. The only thing that's different is narrative about Donald Trump. Aggressively bombed Somalia. Donald Trump continued to wage the war on Yemen. Donald Trump continued to persecute Julian Assange. Donald Trump continued to occupy and burn wheat fields, take oil, and do all the other things in Syria. And Donald Trump wouldn't have batted an eye at selling weapons to anybody. Interesting, though, how clear the same thing is happening no matter what. But I want to just quickly run over these because I was going to have Robert and Lakesh on tonight, but due to this the research I was doing and the breadth of the story today, we pushed it off till tomorrow. But Eva Bartlett, as always, someone else I'd also should get back on the show. It's been far too long since her and I have connected. Israel violates international law anew, again bombing Syria to further indifference of Western media. We'll get into this more tomorrow, but it's just disgusting that these governments are allowed to do whatever the hell they want, including murdering civilians, and the West does not even bat an eye. But Iran or Syria or Venezuela is even accused of something like that with no evidence, and it's a week-long narrative discussion on mainstream media. It's gross. It's really gross, and it should show you at the end of the day that these people are not the good people that they're trying to pretend they are. At the very least, they're willing to murder people for their own agenda and chalk it up as defending yourself. I mean, it's just, I see, I want to get into this. We'll talk about it more tomorrow. Contractor killed, American soldier among six wounded in rocket attack near U.S. base in Iraq. We'll also talk about this tomorrow. It seems, according to some of the sources that Robert has touched on and I've spoken to as well, that we're not what it seems that what they're telling you it is. Iran did this is what it always comes back to. But really, this is a lot of different things happening in regard to illegal occupation in a country that they're not supposed to be in, that the people wanted them to leave from. And this is like a carbon copy of what happened before. Contractor killed, people wounded. Now, who has Katyusha rockets, which no doubt were used? ISIS continues to use them, and we don't want to talk about that. As well as the CIA, Mossad. Yeah, they have them too. But guess who doesn't use them? People like the Iranian government or the PMU. But as well, Iran denies the fact that this happened. Of course they do, but even if they did it, they would deny it. But it's interesting. But it's talking about the fact that people were killed, people wounded. And just for some context, when the U.S. government bombed in response to what they alleged was an Iranian attack, they killed dozens of civilians, Iraqi police, Iraqi military. That's not a secret. These weren't even PMU members. And yet they just said Iran proxies. Now, do you think the Iraqi police, the Iraqi military, the Iraqi people are just okay with that? So any number of things could be happening where people, where they're illegally occupying Iraq, are just not okay with the fact that they're illegally occupying Iraq and have so for decades and continue to murder their families and people that they know and military members and policemen that just happen to be there. So as they try to make this whole thing about Iran, remember who they are currently illegally occupying. And maybe that should influence what's really going on there, in your opinion. On top of that, Biden yet again, I think for the fourth time, talks about a, quote, long, dark winter in his speech. Maybe, just maybe, you should take the time to understand what he's referring to. So I'll go ahead and include that in this so you can check out for yourself. All roads lead to dark winter. Continually talking about things like Event 201, Crimson Contagion, well, there's a biowarfare simulation called Dark Winter, and you might be interested to realize that's what they continue to socially engineer predictive program into your mind. Here's the actual video, in case you weren't sure that's actually what he said, with their captions and all. But I also found it very interesting, on another side note, how funny it is that this Twitter right now will warn you away from any BitChute link telling you it's dangerous right now. Any BitChute link, no matter what, puppy dogs and ice cream, dangerous, dangerous, trying to steal your information. Not true. But this is a link right here to the White House official channel on BitChute, which, first of all, why in the world do they have an account on BitChute? You know, that what we're told is the cesspool of white supremacy and dangerous thoughts, and here's the White House with their own account. Does that make sense? I mean, anybody even on these account, on these platforms are being kind of just broadly dumped into one category, and here they are. But they're okay, though, because they're only there to influence those people for good thoughts. Okay, what about anybody else that wants to do that, too? Do they not count? It's just dumb. It's really stupid and simplistic and overly reduced at everything they do, all their narratives. And by the way, this is most definitely their account. It is a confirmed, verified account by BitChute that is the White House account. And it says, but this link to the White House channel, explain why this one says the same thing. If you click on the White House link, oh, look at that. That might be unsafe. You're telling me the White House is trying to steal my personal information? No, it's just a point that you get caught in the broad net. Even the White House on BitChute is caught up in that. It's nonsense. It's censorship. And it even applies to whoever ends up being there. I just thought that was an interesting point to show you how this isn't guided by any principle. They're censoring out of desperation because people are seeing what they are. I just found that to be telling. And to bring us into the COVID-19 discussion to start out, here's an interesting clip that was shared by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. from his own TV, it seems. First of all, recognize the point of what this show was, combating mistrust in science. They're trying to, with Bill Gates, of course, because that non-scientist, non-doctor, as seemingly, I don't want to go too deep, but the point is this guy should not be the person who's telling you what to do. Here's what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. pointed out. Let's see if you catch it first.
Bill Gates' advice on how to combat mistrust in science at 60MinutesOvertime.com, sponsored by Pfizer.
That's not a joke. I swear that is not a joke. That is not some kind of Babylon Bee spoof. That is literally a 60 minutes show about combating mistrust in science, sponsored by a company with an obvious profit motive to make sure you trust what they're telling you is the science. Now, I'm not saying that guarantees that what they're telling you is wrong, but my point is that is wrong. There's no way that that makes sense. If that was in a different situation where that was a group that was on, like, you know, hypothetically, quote, you know, our side, whatever you want to call it, they would look and point and laugh and say, oh, really? You're going to have, that's funded by the Republican Party? Like, blah, 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 blah. And I shouldn't even said that because that implies somehow I'm on the Republican side. I'm on neither side of the two-party illusionists. But just to make the point that if it was something like that, they would laugh at it. That's funded by the Democrats? Oh, that's so fake news. It's just so stupid how this is not balked at. And as I said, the worst part is many won't even understand why that's wrong. It's crazy. But keeping this in mind, the idea of, you know, trusting people telling you to trust the science coming from people that have an obvious motive to lie about the science and, in fact, have literally been caught lying about the science. Think about the questioning the experts as this is the new scare of the day. Oh, exclusive. Two variants have merged into heavily mutated coronavirus. Okay, so now they've become one. So the two variants that I have not even satisfied they're even there, that have been stated by the NERVTAG group of the UK, the WHO, that they're not more dangerous and not more transmissible. But so now they combine and, oh, it's the worst thing we've ever seen. But I thought we were already dealing with the worst thing we've ever seen. It didn't seem like we were that bad based on the numbers. It's just ridiculous. I'm being facetious. It continues to go. The UK and California variants of coronavirus appear to have combined into a heavily mutated hybrid, sparking concern that we may be entering a new phase of the COVID-19 pandemic. Sounds scary. But guess what, though? The recumbent, it was discovered by Bet Korber at the Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico, who told a meeting organized by the New York Academy of Sciences on February 2nd that she had seen, quote, pretty clear evidence of it in her database of U.S. viral genomes. A little less certain when you get down into it, huh? If confirmed, the recombinant would be the first to be detected in this pandemic. So it's not certain, it's not confirmed. So why are we reporting this as fact? Two variants have merged into heavily mutated coronavirus. That's not possible, question mark, could it be? No, this happened. You should be scared. Wear your mask and go inside. That's what this is about. If confirmed, can you imagine what the mainstream would do if we were reporting things? Oh, you know all the time, because we report things that are confirmed and they laugh and go, that's not confirmed. Oh, that was already debunked 2 weeks ago. This is not even confirmed information, and they're reporting it because that's what the mainstream is. It is a funnel. It is a streamline of propaganda to your ears, to your eyes. Korber has only seen a single recombinant genome among thousands of sequences, and it isn't clear whether the virus is being transmitted from person to person or it's just a one-off. Now, look, you could argue that this is somebody reporting just to be safe so we know the information. Okay, so why doesn't that apply to vaccine adverse events? Why doesn't that apply to information around the tests of COVID-19? You see, it's hypocrisy. It's a double standard. You don't get to say, we want all the information possible just to make sure, just to be safe, and then hide information where it's topics that you don't like. This is not journalism. This is taking something that aligns with what they want you to be thinking, dangerous, more severe, get a vaccine, and then just reporting it as fact, even though it's completely unconfirmed. It says, Sergey Pond at Temple University in Pennsylvania, he says that there is no evidence of widespread recombination, but that, quote, coronavirus is all recombined, so it's a question. It's a question of when, not if. If that's such a certainty, why has it never come up in this discussion before? Let's put it like this: out there in the chat, have you heard of recombination before in regard to viruses? I argue this is something that has been discussed, but is not a prominent topic. But we're talking about it today as if this is just the logical step that it's taking. The implications of the finding aren't yet clear because very little is known about the recombinant's biology. But let's report it as fact, though. Lucy Van Dorp at University College of London says that she hadn't yet heard about the recombinant, but, quote, would not be overly surprised if the case start to be detected. So just like my point on this is, just like I said before, it doesn't matter what you think the next marker is. Is it going to be everybody getting herd immunity, or is it going to be everybody in the vaccine, or is it going to be once we have low hospital admissions? It won't matter. There's going to be a new marker every time. You can do literally everything they told you to do, and then it will be like, uh-oh, a recombinant version, two variants merged. Oh, now you're all in danger again. Go back in your home. Put your mask on, which, by the way, they're not even telling you to stop that stuff, even with the vaccines. This is just a continuation of the narrative. Now, even if this stuff is, in fact, exactly what they're telling you it is, based on everything else and the data around the death numbers and the fact that the vast majority are happening in nursing homes, I mean, on and on and on, it shows you that this is not actually what we're being told. How can 60% of all the deaths in England in regard to this be disabled people? This doesn't add up. So all they're going to do is keep telling you things that they want you to hear to get scared. Oh, and on the note of trusting your authorities, right, which is what that whole point was about, you know, just trust what they're telling you the science is, or trust what they tell you, and that includes lockdowns. Here's an interesting point. CBC News, because they're an authority we should be trusting, right? A disinformation campaign falsely suggests that Canadians will be forcibly sent to quarantine sites. Remember when I reported about the member of parliament reading legislation that talked about the quarantine camps, and all the people in the parliament laughed at him? I mean, obviously that's true. Look at the next slide. We all know that's happening. We've seen multiple incidences of people forcibly quarantined against their will or family members. The point is, when CBC wrote this out, they either didn't care to look into the literal legislation that even I was reporting on, or they lied to you. I don't know why this continues to not change people's minds. They are either so bad at their job, or they're willing to just write whatever they're told, or they're knowingly lying to you. There is no way to misunderstand that. For those in the podcast, the next slide says, then understand, we're talking about October 20th. They're saying fake news. That is false. They falsely suggest that Canadians will be forcibly sent to quarantine camps. Then on February 9th, it says, from CBC News, mind you, two men, both now at home, are among the few willing to speak publicly about their mandatory stays in Calgary's isolation hotel, which has been transformed into a federal quarantine facility. How embarrassing. They never even follow up and go, yes, we were incorrect. Now, you could ask yourself, well, maybe they just missed it. Maybe they didn't see it. It was everywhere. If a member of parliament was speaking about it publicly in parliament and reading from the document and I reported on it, are we going to pretend that CBC News doesn't have the resources to see that? They lied to you. They knowingly lied to you. And whether that was about making sure you didn't get scared about what this was because it's in our best interest, or they just don't care. Why are we listening to these people? Why are anybody out there who's first time on this show, why do you listen to the mainstream media? I know that most of you, this is falling on deaf ears because you don't, but a lot of them do. Now, bringing this into the discussion today, the main point, the idea of trusting the science, trusting the authorities, or rather trusting what they tell you, right? Going back to this clip, combating mistrust in science. Now, what are we actually distrusting here? Are we distrusting the science, or are we distrusting the people that are telling us what the science is? Very different things. What we are talking about is distrusting the authorities who are screaming about the science, who aren't actually looking or talking about the real science. We'll walk through it today. You could look at it for yourself. You can research it for yourself. All the links will be there when we're done. Now, I've already gone over this before. Starting with this point, your mask may be causing candida growth in your mouth. All right. So this first part is about making sure you understand that your mask is unequivocally creating fungal and bacterial infections in your mouth. That's what this is. There's no denying that. Red bumps around your mouth and cracks at your corners of your lips may mean you have a fungal infection, but doesn't mean you should stop wearing a mask. Of course not. Don't remove the thing that's causing the infection. Just keep that on. But the point here, first of all, you may be out there thinking, well, I wear a mask and that doesn't happen to me. So there's two things there. One, you could be wearing it every day for the rest of your life and you still may not get it. It's not everything all the time. But this is creating the circumstances that make this highly more likely. And then, of course, recognize that maybe you're speaking up saying, I didn't get this stuff. Maybe that's because you only wear it for an hour a day. Whereas people are having to wear this stuff for 8+ hours a day. People that are working at places like the mailman. I mean, I see them, they're wearing in their car all day long because of their federal job. So 8+ hours a day. People that are working in hot conditions, like in a restaurant, in the kitchen, who have to wear these things all day long. I mean, think about it. Anyway, I had a thought right there about kitchens and masks, but I don't want to lose the point. The point is, this is happening. And it absolutely is possible. It says, as if maskne weren't bad enough, there's another skin problem to worry about during COVID-19 pandemic, candida overgrowth. It's basically a yeast infection around your mouth. The CDC recommends that the general public wear cloth-based coverings. I just want to reiterate that because the cloth is the main part of this. The surgical masks, they're also dangerous in the same regard. And the studies I can show you myself, which we've talked about many times in regard to both cloth masks and medical masks, we've gotten on this in depth. I'll go over a little more today. But cloth is what the vast majority of Americans are wearing. And this is what is absolutely, and we know, creating the increased risk of infection. British Medical Journal, random controlled trial. This is simply saying that cloth masks had significantly higher rates of illness and very clearly that they found moisture retention, reuse of the masks, and poor filtration may result in increased risk of infection. And that's what we're seeing today. And again, a point that I just said here was that particles almost 97% of the time made through a cloth mask, meaning they're meaningless in regard to what they're even talking about today. Even medical masks were almost half the time. We're talking about droplets here, guys. But going back, mask conditions allow yeast to thrive. So here is what it ends up causing. In some cases, there's plenty of other things that can be caused by just simply creating these conditions in your mouth. But I'm trying to start a thread here in regard to leading to inflammation and leading to other things that cause more severe illness that have the same exact symptoms we're calling everything else around COVID. Now, under this, under oral thrush, which is basically, as it says, a yeast infection develops in your mouth. Symptoms of oral thrush: soreness, burning, dry cracked corners of your mouth, difficulty swallowing, and a loss of taste, which I found very interesting. Difficulty swallowing, I want you to remember that in regard to the tongue part we get to. Everything under the sun that's happening in your mouth right now is being called because COVID, despite the obvious connection to anything that any dentist would tell you this is a no-brainer right now. Or any honest dentist, put it that way. But on top of that, a loss of taste, which remember, we've all been hearing this weird side effect. Even though what's interesting, I was talking about this with someone today, a loss of taste and smell is actually a really common side effect of the flu and a lot of other things. So it's odd that it's being framed as some kind of weird, out there side effect that we never expected, despite the fact that respiratory diseases seem to almost, they usually have some kind of effect on your smell or your taste. So it's odd that it's being framed that way. But remember, when we get into this discussion, as we go through, the taste is loss of taste is a side effect of this. I think it relates to something a little bit larger. In some cases, it says oral thrush can affect your esophagus. The same fungus that causes oral thrush can also cause yeast infections in other parts of your body. That's important because what we're going to talk about here is how this can be spread from person to person, as well as the fact that it can spread to other parts of your or other people's bodies. Your esophagus being interesting before, keeping this in mind before we get into the bacterial pneumonia part. But here's what I want to show you here. Is oral thrush contagious? It says, if you have oral thrush, infection in your mouth, it's possible to pass the fungus that causes the condition on to someone else if you kiss them or some other exchange in the same certain sort of way. In some cases, that person might develop oral thrush. It says the fungus that causes oral thrush also causes yeast infections in other body parts. It's possible for you to pass the fungus from one part of your body to another part of someone else's body. So recognize this, especially in regard to the side effect of a loss of taste. You can see how this mask could cause this, or in fact, are one of the most likely causes, just simply, and by the way, we're going to get into, it's reported all over the place. This is not a secret. So we know that it's causing oral thrush, which then has a side effect of a loss of taste, which then can be spread to other people, and the masks are causing this, which are being forced on people everywhere. And then we see this continual loss of taste show up in the side effects. Is it possible that that's being caused by something else? Yes, it is. This is only one small part before we get into a lot of stuff here. But remember that this can be spread from person to person. Now, we have medical experts now who are speaking out saying, no, and I know, by the way, I should make it clear. Some of these, I mentioned that I talked about this in the past. This one is from August 4th, 2020. From last year. Same with this one. This is from a while back. Now I'm setting the table here with some of these things, but these things are going to be, I'll point out the dates. Most of them are highlighted, but most of these are going to be from middle of last year. And then once we get to the end, it'll be closer to today. Now this is medical experts speaking out against a councilwoman in Anaheim, just simply making the claim that masks cause dental issues, which remember is happening. Like this is where we are right now. And that's across the board. I'll even show you once we get to the last tab on this part. August 12th, it says Anaheim councilwoman said at Tuesday's council meeting that dentists, and this is what's the best part, she's saying dentists are finding that wearing masks are causing serious dental issues. I think this, or I saw on a YouTube video, she's saying that dentists, who by the way, in this context are the experts, are seeing these things because masks. It says, quote, dentists are finding that it's causing very serious dental problems, cavities, gum disease, halitosis, which is bad breath. So keep that in mind when you're snuggling up to a mask. Now, what's interesting, cavities is one they're going, no, that's just not true. And I'm going to make the case for all these easy. Gum disease being the most important because gum disease, periodontal disease, it's also called, this is when we get into the idea of inflammation, which can lead to systemic inflammation, which is a big deal. All these things are big deal. Gum disease is a big deal. That's why we talk about heart disease, which is what that leads to. It's the number one cause of death in this country, and yet we're pretending like that's being caused by COVID-19. It's incredible. All they're doing is finding all these side effects after the fact and being like, oh, all these things that are probably caused by malfeasance of our government or industrial disease or whatever they're doing, and we just go, oh, COVID. That's easy. Yes, that's my opinion. I think that's obvious. But here's what she says. This is Dr. Ramesh Gowda, president of the Orange County Dental Society. She says, there's no scientific basis for that. My request to all non-medical people who don't have the expertise, please check with the proper authority. Oh, you mean like a dentist? Yeah, that's who she was talking about. But of course, if we just pretend like that's not, you're using her as a straw man to pretend like what she said is not coming directly from dentists. But it says, it's not fair for any council people or anyone without any knowledge just to assume things. Who assumed anything? She's reporting what the dentist said and to make recommendations. Leave it to, and by the way, I don't think, remember her doing that. She simply said, remember that when you're wearing a mask. Leave it up to the experts and follow the guidance of experts. Oh, you mean like dentists? Yes. There's no scientific basis for that, she says. Remember that statement. And then maybe take some time to look up Dr. Gowda of the Dental Society and make sure you never go to where she may be practicing. Here's the interesting part. Now, this is jumping forward to, this is August as well. I believe this one, I think these were both there. But so anyway, the point is the timeline, August 12th. And this one is actually before she said that. Dentists declare mask mouth a new phenomenon as they see an explosion in patients suffering from tooth decay, gum disease, after wearing face coverings. Seems pretty clear to me. Two top dentists in New York say mask wearing makes people breathe through their nose and subsequently causes their mouth to dry out. That's important. I made this reference in regard to bacterial pneumonia, the mouth drying out, which you'll see repeated everywhere. Any discussion of a mask, no matter how far you go back, one of the main things you'll find is that the mask wearing dries out your mouth. And that is a huge part of what this is. Drying out your mouth while wearing the mask is what causes the bacteria in your mouth to be pulled back into your lungs, possibly, as well as drying out the saliva in your mouth, which very clearly creates a much easier climate to create cavities. Your saliva is, in fact, what helps you fight these cavities in a large degree. So when they balk at the fact that might cause cavities, it's a no-brainer. And they know that. So they're either being paid off to lie or not good at their job or don't know. Or, I mean, yeah, I don't know, any number of things you could add to that. But it says the result is a decrease of saliva in the mouth, which works to neutralize acid and prevent tooth decay. So the saliva not being there creates a situation that makes those things much more likely. I don't know why that's being argued. Gum disease will eventually lead to strokes and an increased risk of heart disease, heart attacks. One dentist claims, saying the long-term effects can be serious. Right? All these dentists are coming out and saying this, and all they do is act like we should be listening to virologists about the reactions of our mouths in regard to these masks, because they want you to think it has to do with COVID-19. Doctors have largely debunked, this is the best part. So after saying all those bullet points, they say doctors have largely debunked other conspiracy theories about mask wearing, including claims that they trap the coronavirus and make infection more likely. Now, I'm pretty sure they meant making coronavirus infection more likely, but let's be clear. This makes infection more likely. I mean, that's literally what they just described. Tooth decay, gum disease, that's infection. So wearing a mask increases your risk of infection. Coronavirus is just another thing that could be increased by wearing that mask. So it's just incredible how they know they're not supposed to go there. It's really incredible. Now, remember, one of the first things I pointed out. Might as well just highlight it in case I didn't look at it again during the show. That they found in the only randomly controlled trial of cloth masks that I can find from the British Medical Journal that the moisture retention and the reuse increases your risk of infection. So it's really done. And that doesn't say what kind of infection. It just says increases your risk of infection. It's just really interesting how willing they are to ignore that. Now, it goes on to say about 50% of our patients, these are dentists saying this, are being impacted by this. So we decided to name it mask mouth after meth mouth. Now, we've already talked about this. Mask mouth is a seriously stinky side effect of wearing masks. It says the new oral hygiene issue caused by, you guessed it, wearing a mask. And the reason they say it like that is because it's a no-brainer, guys. Anytime before this would have been like, well, yeah, obviously, you're breathing in that little hole and that little space the whole time and the moisture's being gagged. You know, it's no-brainer. It says wearing a mask all the time to prevent the spread of coronavirus, or so we're told, it is leading to all kinds of dental disasters like decaying teeth, receding gum lines, and seriously sour breath. Quote, we're seeing inflammation in people's gums that have been healthy forever and cavities in people who have never had them before, says a dentist and co-founder of One Manhattan Dental. Quote, about 50% of their patients, as they said before, are dealing with this. The inflammation part's important because that is essentially what gum disease is to a large degree. And this is what we're beginning to find, even in like a general sense in medicine and health, is that inflammation seems to be the culprit behind damn near a lot of what ails the body. So it's interesting that this is just the first part from multiple angles. It seems inflammation is being caused by a lot of things around this narrative. He says the stinky syndrome is triggered by face coverings, since wearing a mask increases dryness of the mouth and a buildup of bad bacteria, such as streptococcus, strep throat, which is the most common bacteria in your mouth and the leading factor to bacterial pneumonia with a dry mouth that can be pulled back into your lungs. 1, 2, and 3. It's very basic. Quote, people tend to breathe through their mouth instead of through their nose while wearing a mask. The mouth breathing is causing the dry mouth, which leads to a decrease in saliva, and saliva is what fights the bacteria and cleanliness of your teeth. Going forward, this is from July, but here's where they're arguing that that's not true. And it just goes to show you that there are people in dentists, that are coming out and I think exposing that they don't care about the truth. Like, you'll see what I mean. It says, this dentist says that's bogus, that these can cause cavities. And we just walked through how clearly basic that is. This is not a conspiracy theory. The mask dries your mouth. It dries out the saliva. The saliva is a huge factor in stopping cavities, thereby making it very obvious that mask wearing can increase your risk of cavities. I mean, this is crazy obvious. It says a Houston dentist blamed an increase in the cases of dental decay she's been seeing, which so it has been increased. Oh, and that's the first person we're talking about. She's saying masks are causing it. Now that a lot of us are mouth breathing while we have our masks on, we're drying out all the saliva that's usually protecting us from getting cavities. That's increasing your risk of cavities. It's very simple. This person says dentists, physicians, nurses, assistants, and all sorts of healthcare providers have been wearing masks for decades. Does that mean we all have a higher level of cavities? Of course not. Well, first of all, that's a broad assumption. It certainly could be, right? I mean, if you're arguing we've all been doing it forever, does that mean that you don't know what it looks like without it? Of course. But see, this is the kind of false equivalence, the fallacies that we see constantly today. But this isn't my point of this. She says if cavities are up, and that's a big if, which she just said they were up, since we don't have enough data yet, there could be a variety of reasons. So you're saying you don't know, but yet saying, but it's not what you said. It's just this, clearly this person has a motive. But here's the interesting point. Dentists, physicians, nurses have been wearing these for decades. Okay, in what way? When's the last time you actually talked to a nurse or a doctor or anybody that wears these things and found out how often they actually wear them? Yes, you're going to find the people that get trotted out on mainstream media, but you know what you'll find interesting? I talked to hundreds of these people because of what this is. Guess what? All of them say something different than what you see on the mainstream media. How is that possible? I'll let you think about that for a second, but the point is that all of these people that I talk to will tell you that it's rare. You wear these things in certain circumstances and you take it off. You don't leave them on 8 hours a day. That's not what is happening in these areas. That's what's happening here, and it's unprecedented. So when she tries to make it sound like they've been doing it forever, no, what we're doing now has never happened before. Not even in regard to what you've seen in the past from China or other places like that. This is different. And she just wants you to think, nope, can't happen, despite the evidence and despite this. Why? Well, because we just don't know yet. Doesn't that sound like the same argument they use for anything they don't want you to think about? Side effects of the vaccine, side effects. We need more data. But we'll tell you that's not true, but we need more data. Those two things are contradictory. Here's what she says, what the possibilities are. Well, if you've missed a dental checkup, well, you're more likely to have a cavity. Okay, being distracted by the pandemic may lead to lax dental hygiene. Stress eating usually includes sugar, so you get where she's going with this. Okay, so the lockdowns are causing problems, making you miss your dental appointments, making you eat differently. Yeah, isn't that also what we've been saying? It's funny how they have to lean into something they otherwise say is fake news when they try to make their point. As I always say, when you lie about everything, right? Here, at this point, yes, we know that. People are missing their dentals, but they're also missing much more important things, like in regard to medical visits with diabetes or any number of issues that we've gone over in the past where people are not getting their checkups and then having severe problems because of that. So it's just so funny. And then we argue that and they go, no, it's COVID doing that, not the lockdown. So the point is, all of these things are sure not going. You're going to see a 50% increase because people are not going to the dentist or because people are being lazy? I mean, sure, maybe. Or maybe it's much more likely that the, or how about those things on top of drying out the saliva in your mouth is absolutely causing this? According to her, no, no, not possible. Because COVID is what's, because all COVID, COVID is what's about. Right? It's just mindset. They're in a tunnel and it's just nothing else anywhere but COVID. It's incredible. But just so you can see before we jump over into the bacterial pneumonia part, there is an endless string of dental experts, right? People that are dentists that are in this field that know what they're talking about, not a virologist talking about dental stuff, but here saying this is what's happening. This one's from Pleasant Family Dentistry, saying mass mouth is causing this and drying out your mouth. Colgate, what is mass mouth? Causes symptoms prevention. Dental Family Center, mass mouth. Yes, it's a real thing. Oral Health Group, mask mouth, seriously sneaky side effect. There's another one from New York Post we just read. On and on and on. This is Riley Dentistry. Do you have mask mouth? Here's how you know. It's all over the place, guys. And yet we have people that are still to this day, yet that one was an older one, but still to this day arguing, and we'll get to that in a minute, that this is not real, that this is fake, or we don't know yet. We need more data. It's just painful because the reality is, and this is my previous discussion about this, that I hope you'll take the time to look at, asking, do masks cause bacterial pneumonia? And it's obviously yes, but this has become larger. I think it's much bigger than just bacterial pneumonia. And I've also included this, by the way, the link I played in the beginning where Dr. James Lyon Weiler, PhD, just agrees with the fact that that's obvious. And there's a link in there to the page where of our interview on The Last American Vagabond as well. But please, if you want a more deep, nuanced discussion and understanding of specifically the bacterial pneumonia cause, this is what you should watch. And then remember this point I'm about to go into now, because this is the this next point just makes this show complete. Now, going forward, what is bacterial pneumonia? Bacterial pneumonia is an infection of your lungs caused by certain bacteria. Well, the most common one, as I said before, strep. But other bacteria can cause it too. That's important. If your body defenses, your immune system become weak for some reason, well, that bacteria can go down into your lungs. So, by the way, there's a second point. I mean, not even just simply because it's already in your mouth and your mask dries it out, you can breathe it back into your lungs and cause that infection. That's painfully clear. But on top of that, your immune system could be weakened, which a mask can add to, and plenty of other things could happen out there, such as any other things that are going on. You can just get the flu and have a low immune system, and the mask will make that even easier to happen. The bacteria can go down into your lungs, which will cause bacterial pneumonia. I don't know why they're arguing that this isn't possible. It's pretty ridiculous. It's actually revealing. It says you have a higher risk of getting bacterial pneumonia if you are 65 years of older, if you have conditions like asthma, diabetes, or heart disease, right? All these things we're hearing about comorbidities, and they seem to be the people they're focusing on. So it's almost like they're making sure that this happens, and maybe that's not even intentional. At the end of the day, it's making it happen anyway. And the two most common harmful bacteria, as I pointed out, are Streptococcus mutants. Just to be easy for everyone to hear, strep is the bacteria you've probably heard the most about. It lives in your mouth, specifically on tooth surfaces and difficult to clean areas like pits and fissures in your teeth, and feeds on sugars and starches that you eat, leading to the formation of cavities. That's because it produces enamel eroding acids and thrives in low pH, making it the main cause of tooth decay in humans. So when you remove the saliva that fights that predominantly, well, it latches onto your teeth, as we just talked about, and causes more cavities. That's pretty basic. Those cavities lead to gum disease, which leads to inflammation, which leads to all the things we're talking about, and the strep, which leads to bacterial pneumonia. All of this causing the side effects that they're claiming on, in some parts, on COVID-19. But here is the point, going back to this yet again, of do they cause bacterial pneumonia, that needs to be heard in that discussion. This is from perio.org, the place to go about periodontal disease, which is gum disease. Gum disease and other systemic diseases. Respiratory disease. Research has found that bacteria that grow in the oral cavity can be aspirated, breathed into the lungs to cause respiratory diseases such as pneumonia, especially in people with periodontal disease. Okay, so can masks cause periodontal disease? Can masks cause gum disease? Obviously. I mean, that's a no-brainer. Every one of these dentists and articles are all making, yes, this is causing that, which leads to gum disease. Okay, so it can, for sure. So if people who have periodontal disease, are most likely to have that bacteria that grows, that causes these diseases, and then you're also wearing a mask, which dries out your mouth and then pulls it back into your lungs, which is what we just talked about. I think it was here. Yes. Your lungs. Well, there you go. Then it becomes an easy path to bacterial pneumonia. So this is, it's incredible. This is the piece that was missing from that show, telling you right here that the bacteria in your mouth can be breathed into your lungs, which causes pneumonia. Add the mask. It just simply makes it that much more. You don't need the mask. The mask just adds it and makes it more likely, exponentially more likely. It dries out your mouth. It creates, and on top of that, it increases the bacterial buildup. Right. So it's, there's a lot of factors here. And we just showed you before on this, it's very clearly, it increases the bacterial buildup. So that adds to it. Now going one step further, here is any number of them, by the way, you'll find. Here's just one that stood out to me where they're telling you this is November. Wearing a face mask can cause fungal and bacterial infections like pneumonia. That's a myth they're telling you. It says, this is very common myth that's circulating. First, let's talk about bacterial infections. The way bacterial pneumonia tends to develop is through breathing in contents into your lungs. Exactly. And I think we just made it painfully clear that that's exactly what is easily happening. 1, 2, 3, right into your lungs, using the mask and so on. So if in terms of wearing a mask, it says, the respiratory droplets you exhale that land on the inside of your mask that you then breathe back in will not give you bacterial pneumonia. That is fundamentally false. I literally just walked through how strep is one of the most common bacteria in your mouth. That is what can cause bacteria. That is, or cause bacterial pneumonia. That is being caught on your mask or being caught in your mouth when your mouth dries out and being pulled into your lungs. So how in the world is it possible that Unity Point Health doesn't know that? I find it impossible to believe. They were told to write this, told to argue this, or been convinced by somebody above them that this was the absolute truth, despite what they think they know. In any case, this is not true. I just proved it to you. It says, if you have phlegm, you should find a way to safely spit it out, which means you touch your mask, which means you should then throw it away and get a new one. Nobody does that. The way you aren't at risk of breathing in large amounts of mucus or saliva into your lungs. Oh, that way you aren't, which is how bacterial pneumonia develops. That's actually not true as well. Breathing in large amounts of, well, it can add to it, but it's about the bacteria getting into your lungs. That's what it's about. Now, fungal pneumonia is not even my point, but what they said here was interesting about fungal pneumonia. One way you can hypothetically end up with fungal pneumonia is if you find an old mask that's very moldy and decide to use it. How often do you think that's happening right now? So how about we just add fungal pneumonia to the same point? Because people are very clearly wearing masks in the winter, breathing through them, getting them wet, and then letting them dry and then wearing them again. You may think you're washing it, but some people aren't. And by the way, when you wash it more than twice, it becomes useless, as many studies have found. Have you stopped wearing that one? Probably not. There's 100 people out there that aren't. It's just funny how people don't know this stuff and they act like we're the ones that aren't. It's incredible. But this is painful, how they're lying to you. They're continuing to lie to you. Now, here's a study from 2014, microbial contamination on used surgical masks among hospital personnel. Now, this was about, in general, the bacteria in the hospital areas and the buildup on the mask, but they found an important part of this that I found relevant. It says the predominant isolated bacteria and fungi contaminated on the inside and the outside of the used masks and air samples were similar, Staphylococcus, which is interesting. Now, that doesn't relate to what we're talking about in regard to mask, mouth, and bacterial pneumonia, but remember that. Now, it's because staph and strep are different things. Results found that bacterial and fungal counts in air samples showed significantly positive correlation with the bacterial contamination load on the outside area of the used masks, meaning that the more buildup, the more likely. Let me read it again. Results found that bacterial and fungal counts in the air samples showed significantly positive correlation with the buildup on the mask. So the area around, it was the point of the study. But the idea is that on the inside and the outside of your mask, this bacteria is building up. So this stuff can absolutely be breathed in. Now, getting back to the point about the size of these things, and we've seen plenty of studies about influenza, right? All the ones that they go, those aren't about COVID-19, so they don't apply. Well, they do apply to this discussion. because what we're talking about is the fact that viruses can come in and out of these masks. The size of them are too small to be stopped by the size of the pores in these masks, as well as the fact that the aerosolized particulates don't get stopped at all. And we just talked about this in regard to cloth, which the vast majority are wearing. Penetration of the cloth is almost 97%. 97%. Medical 44. So these things are coming in and out, and also coming from out and into your mask and into your mouth, which is dried out and potentially going into your lungs. No brainer. Well, and also on perio.org, it says, this is what leads us into the discussion of inflammation, which is the real important part here, that all of this is leading to inflammation that is causing some much more severe things. Research has shown that periodontal disease is associated with several other diseases, which is important because it is leading to some severe problems. And all of these things seem to be kind of just lumped into COVID today. For a long time, it was thought that bacteria was the factor that linked periodontal disease, remember gum disease, to other diseases in the body. However, more recent research demonstrates that inflammation may be responsible for the association. And that's a lot of things that people are finding today. Inflammation seems to be tied back to damn near everything that ails the body. Now it says, therefore, treating inflammation may not help manage periodontal diseases, but may also help, or wait, it says, may not only help manage periodontal diseases, but may also help with the management of other chronic inflammatory conditions. So gum disease that can be caused by your mask is leading to inflammation, which could lead to inflammation of other parts or other problems in your body. Now, this is an interesting point, and this is a study basically just talking about chronic inflammation in general, and it goes over an important point in regard to what's happening in this country, all the way back to 2000. Now, you can only imagine where it's at right now. It says in 2000, nearly 125 million Americans were living with chronic conditions, and 61 million people, 21% of the population, had more than one. And we're talking about inflammation. That's what the whole study's about, these chronic conditions causing inflammation. It says in recent estimates by RAND Corporation, in 2014, nearly 60% of Americans had at least one chronic condition. 42% had more than one, and 12 adults had five or more chronic conditions causing inflammation. Worldwide, this is crazy. Three of five in the whole world die due to chronic inflammation diseases. This is the pandemic, right? This is incredible. And the problem is that right now, this is being caught, like this is being categorized in a lot of ways under things that it's not. And we're seeing that in a lot of different ways. Now, my point of bringing this up is to recognize that this country and the world, we're already having a very severe problem with inflammation. And now you add all these other things, including, by the way, a vaccine that is very clearly causing inflammation in the body, as we've played many times from Dr. Pavlovsky, why does that not sound right now? But the clip we played before where he's talking in front of Congress in February, and he's telling them, these things cause inflammation. These lipid nanoparticles end up in the brain. I mean, it's and this inflammation is happening from every angle, it would seem. And people were already struggling from this. Now, remember, the inflammation is what leads to things like gum disease and the other things we're talking about. So if people were already struggling with this, and then you put a mask on them, and then you create these other circumstances that just kind of add to this perfect storm of creating the inflammation, you're going to see an exponential increase in a lot of things. So consider that, the possibility of that being the case. Now, under periodontal disease, here's how it describes it. It says periodontal gum disease is an infection of the tissues that hold your teeth in place. And as well as the bone, as I understand it, it's typically caused by poor brushing and flossing habits that allow plaque, sticky film of bacteria, to build up on the teeth and harden. Or you could have a mask that dries your saliva and increases that process exponentially. In advanced stages, periodontal disease can lead to sore, bleeding gums, painful chewing problems, and even tooth loss. Tooth loss is what I want you to remember. The symptoms, bad breath, reddish swollen gums, tender bleeding gums, painful chewing, loose teeth, sensitive teeth, all these things that we're hearing about in regard to mask mouth, clearly. Now, here is an important part. This is Health Day, February 9th, talking about how gum disease is considered a comorbidity in regard to COVID-19. Well, of course it is. But they're saying add it to the list. I don't know why it wouldn't have already been on there. It's clearly leading to one of the leading causes of death, but it's interesting how it's like a side thought. But here's what they had to say, quote, it is well established that systemic inflammation, not just inflammation, but systemic, meaning it's multiple points of your body, all over your body, is not only linked with periodontal disease, but to several other respiratory diseases as well. And this is the point of all of this, is the systemic inflammation, which is linked to periodontal disease, which is then linked to mask wearing, is also linked to other respiratory diseases as well, but is a huge problem that is causing lots of side effects. And this is creating this perfect storm, in my opinion. Now, this doesn't have to mean that every single thing that's happening is due to this, just like at the same time, not every single thing that's happening is due to COVID-19. It's never that simple. But the question you should ask is whether or not all of these different points are converging to make that perfect storm of inflammation and other problems that are creating this illusion in one part. Remember, there's parts of the PCR test is part of the illusion. We have all sorts of these parts, the combination of flu and pneumonia. These are all adding to the illusion, but this is another part. And the part that I think is causing some of the symptoms, maybe all of them, maybe a lot of them, that they're deeming COVID-19, as well as what they're now calling long-haul COVID, which, if you break it down, pretty much seems to be every side effect you would expect from wearing a mask for long periods of time, from getting periodontal disease, from having bacterial pneumonia. So is it possible that there is no long-haul COVID and this is just a side effect of all the things they're forcing on people? Of course that's possible. Inflammation and taste disorders. Now, on that point in the beginning of whether, losing your taste, we've heard that a lot. You're losing your, oh, by the way, taste and smell are pretty linked. If you lose your taste or your smell, you tend to lose the other one because they're kind of interconnected. And it's not actually because you technically lose the other one. It's just that if you don't taste, you tend to not be able to smell and vice versa because they are connected. But the point is here, inflammation tied to that. And just quickly recognize that it says inflammation has been shown to be a common factor in many of the conditions and diseases associated with taste disorders. So just recognize that this inflammation could be causing a lot of these side effects. I'm not saying they're guaranteed to be, but they could be. And the information seems to point to that pretty clearly as at least a possibility. But those are reflexively dismissed as fake news just because people do not want to dare to challenge the official narrative, despite how obvious this is being manipulated. Now, this brings us into the discussion of something that is related. It's related. It's connected to the larger story, but it's a separate concept. And this is important because they lead to the same ideas, but they're not the idea of what we're going to get into next, which is hypoxia, hypercapnia, being caused by the mask wearing is leading to similar problems from a different angle that lead to the same outcome. It's really interesting and alarming. But this is in regard to specifically psychological effects as well. But the fact that hypoxia, as we can point out, is... this is interesting, actually. This is more specific that I didn't get into before. Hypoxemia is low oxygen in your blood, whereas hypoxia is low oxygen in your tissues. So one just seems like a more severe case of the problem. Now, the next one is hypercapnia, which is too much carbon dioxide in your bloodstream, which says it usually happens as a result of hyperventilation or not being able to breathe properly and get oxygen into your lungs. So there's also a term called hypocapnia, which is the reverse of that. But in this case, we're talking about hypercapnia because you're wearing a mask, you're not getting enough oxygen, which, by the way, there's countless studies, which I had up just in case I wanted to show them, talking about this, but no doubt showing you that these things are causing exactly that. Reduction in pressure, oxygen in your blood, the same thing we're talking about right now, in many studies showing you that. Now, I'll include these all for yourself that show the exact point of the reduction of blood oxygen level. And I, by the way, as I always point out, I actually don't have one of them up right now. Oh, maybe I do. Right there. No, that's not one. Anyway, I have on every one of my main pages for this show, I include, that's not one either, get that in a minute, I'll include all these links for you to see. But the idea is that these things absolutely lead, masks absolutely have a side effect of a reduced blood oxygen level, as well as many other things, headaches, all kinds of side effects that are right now being deemed COVID-19 side effects. But so you have this on, you're not getting enough oxygen, so you start to hyperventilate, but you're breathing back in carbon dioxide. What are the symptoms of mild hypercapnia? Flushed skin, drowsiness, inability to focus, mild headaches. Remember all of these, because they're exactly what they're calling long-haul COVID. Feel disoriented, dizzy, feeling short of breath, being abnormally tired, severe ones, unexplained feelings of confusion, abnormal, I mean, all these psychological things they're putting on COVID, abnormal feelings of paranoia and depression, abnormal muscle twitching, irregular heartbeat, hyperventilation, seizures, panic attack, passing out. Think about passing out in regard to how this all started, people falling over in the streets. Interesting. Now, under hypercapnia, it says right here, hypercapnia is generally caused by hyperventilation, lung disease, or diminished consciousness. It may also be caused by exposure to environments containing abnormally high concentrations of carbon dioxide or by rebreathing exhaled carbon dioxide. So just so we understand, this is absolutely possible and can be caused by wearing a mask and not breathing enough oxygen, period. But back to the study. I might have read this before, but I want you to read the abstract. Wearing a mask causes psychological changes to multiple organ systems, including the brain, the heart, the lungs, the kidney, and the immune system. That's important because it lowers your immune system, which then increases the risk that your bacteria can be pulled back in your lungs, which causes bacterial pneumonia. It says, we examine changes in oxygen and carbon dioxide concentrations in masked airspace that is available to the airway over the first 45 seconds of wear. Our findings of reduced oxygen and increased carbon dioxide in a masked airspace are not inconsistent with previously reported data. And again, I'll include those studies so you can see them all for yourself where they prove it. And remember, these are studies that are, let's see, there was, let me find the authors. Well, they're posted on the National Library of Medicine from the NIH, but I have all these listed, by the way, and let me get back here so I don't lose my spot. Where were we? There we go. I'll include them all so you can look at them for yourself. But these are all studies that are coming from the very people that you're told to listen to. I've reported them many times. And that's while there are actual people out there, doctors, scientists, that are saying that there's nothing that proves that. That there's no science. Or that the science says that they don't. And it's literally the opposite of when you look at the only, those are the only ones that I can find. But it goes on to say, we also consider the range of injuries known to occur to the above-named organ systems in a state of hypoxia and hypercapnia. As an excretory pathway, carbon dioxide released by cells throughout the body and then past the alveoli and then the airways. God, I know. I looked at that earlier. Let me see if I can. No, I can't. And airways and orifices has not been previously challenged by deliberate obstruction in the history of the animal kingdom. Yeah, I actually remember we read this before. But so this is incredible. There's a lot of data in here showing you all these things and all the side effects and how they're causing what they're causing. It's a really important one that'll be absolutely dismissed because it's coming from the primary doctor medical journal, which doesn't include mainstream input. It is peer-reviewed by other scientists, and that's it. It's completely peer-reviewed. But they won't like it because it's not allowed to go through their mainstream circles. Right, because I made this point last time. What really matters? Do we care that the government and the health institutions have the opportunity to look at this, or do we just care about other professionals reviewing it? Because the peer review process is just simply about making sure other doctors review other doctors' work, or rather scientists and other scientists' work. And they look at it, and they say, yes, I agree, that looks accurate. Not whether the government goes, oh, okay, we agree with that. They don't, but that's what's happening, right? We have mainstream influence over these things. But this is the real science when you're just talking about scientists and doctors and anyone, people that are talking among themselves and coming to conclusions about the facts. But bringing this to the point that really caught my attention that somebody shared with me, this is actually from November, I believe, but this is not, this brings, we'll bring it all the way to today where they're still saying this from the New York Times. Their teeth fell out. Oh, by the way, I can just read it on the Seattle Times because they reposted it. Because the New York Times need you to pay for their content because they're about to go under, it seems. But here is the Seattle Times reposting the New York Times article. Just so you know, it's the same exact article, and it's called "Their Teeth Fell Out." Was it another COVID-19 consequence? I'm not kidding, too. This is incredible. Earlier in November, Farah Kamili popped a wintergreen breath mint in her mouth and noticed a strange sensation, a bottom tooth wiggling against her tongue. She had never lost an adult tooth. I missed that part last time. She had never lost an adult tooth? That's crazy. That can't be right. Oh, never mind. Excuse me. I'm misreading that. An adult tooth. Excuse me. Let me keep going. I don't know why I was thinking. I was thinking like a child, that she, like all her children's teeth. That's weird. Anyway, going forward, she had never lost her adult tooth. She touched the tooth to confirm it was loose, initially thinking the problem might be the mint, which I don't know why that means. The next day, the tooth flew out of her mouth and into her hand, and there was never blood or pain. Now, this is interesting because the idea of gum disease and what we just went over in regard to loosening your teeth, right here, and even tooth loss, right? So that's obvious a tie-in right there. There's clearly a possible cause is the periodontal disease that could be caused by masks. But it says no blood or no pain. But it's what's interesting, in my opinion, and talking with other people in this field, that the mask drying out your mouth would basically, the blood would ultimately would end up like that. That it would be so dry and that it ultimately would just become so loose and dry that it would just fall out. So it seems like it pretty much aligns with this situation happening with a mask on. But it says that she survived about with COVID-19 that in spring and has joined an online support group, as she has endured a slew of symptoms experienced by many other long haulers. Get this: brain fog, muscle aches, nerve pain, or nerve pain could be malaise or any other things we pointed out, and all of those things are clearly potentially caused by what we're talking about. Whether we're talking about bacterial pneumonia, whether we're talking about hypercapnia or hypoxia, all these things are creating these circumstances and causing all the side effects that they're saying are long-haul COVID without actually being able to prove that that's connected in any way to COVID-19, just by virtue of being after it. But guess what? Somebody can get the vaccine and die 2 minutes later or die instantly, and they'll go, well, we don't know for sure. But you can your toes can hurt 4 months later, and they'll be like, well, long-haul COVID. It's crazy. Now, I was laughing earlier. You guys remember, you know, those that watch this show all the time, I was making a joke about toes hurting in the very beginning of all this. I was making the joke about how, oh, your toes hurt, must be COVID-19. You remember that? And then it actually happened. And we actually have a little COVID toe. And I'm like, I can't believe that. I was literally trying to be facetious. I was joking. And it ended up happening. What do you know? It's almost like they're making fun of me. But back to the point. A support group, which, by the way, these people have a very almost non-existent seemingly chance of dying from this thing. So I don't know why there's any kind of a support group for anybody that's not 80 years old in a nursing home, but whatever. Of course, their support group is about the long haul that they're being told they have as they all sit in an enclosed room wearing masks. I wonder what's going on. There's no rigorous evidence, it says, yet, that the infection can lead to tooth loss or related problems. Okay, so we don't know if any of this is caused by it, but we're going to continue to report it as long haul because that's what we want to do. It's just like the other story. There's nothing to back this up about the converging new things. It hasn't been verified, but we're going to report it as absolute fact. Just so you hear that again, there is no rigorous evidence yet that an infection can lead to tooth loss. They're talking about COVID-19 infection. The reality is that infection of a lot of the mask causing the thrush or oral thrush or any number of other things in your mouth can cause your teeth, periodontal disease, which can cause your teeth to fall out. He says, but among members of her support group, she found others who described teeth falling out, as well as sensitive gums and teeth turning gray or chipping. Literally all those things can be caused by periodontal disease and wearing a mask. We just went through it. And you're telling me that nobody can put this together? Nobody can think, wait a minute, maybe there's something else happening here, especially since there's no evidence that ties this to COVID-19, but there's a lot of evidence that ties it to a lot of other things? No, let's just keep calling it long haul because that suits the narrative and you'll be able to push more clicks and shares. She and other survivors, unnerved by COVID's well-documented effects on the circulatory system, the well-documented effects, as well as symptoms such as swollen toes, hair loss, a suspected connection to tooth loss as well. But some dentists, citing a lack of data, are skeptical that COVID-19 alone could cause dental symptoms. And that's correct. But they don't care about that. Quote, it's extremely rare that teeth will literally fall out of their sockets. Unless you're wearing a mask and drying your mouth out with periodontal disease that's caused because your body's inflamed. But existing dental problems may worsen as a result of COVID-19, he added, especially as patients recover from acute infections and contend with their long-term effects. And some experts say that doctors and dentists need to be open to such possibilities, especially because more than 47% of adults 30 years or older have some form of periodontal disease. Exactly. How can we not put this together with the circumstances being created by the mask? It's painful to watch the discussion, including infections and inflammation of the gums, the bone that's around the teeth, which exactly. So we're just going to pretend like this is connected to an infection that has nothing to do with this, despite the fact that the mask is creating this. in regard, I'm not talking about the, like, the circumstances, the dry mouth. According to 2012, report from the Centers for Disease Control said the same thing. Now it says, the same day her tooth fell out, her partner went out to the Survivor Core group, a Facebook page for people who have lived through COVID-19. And this is where the interesting part comes in. There, he found that Diana Barrett, the page founder, has reported that her 12-year-old son had lost one of his adult teeth. Not a kid tooth, an adult tooth. Months after he had a mild case of COVID-19. Okay, so we're trying to pretend like, well, a lot of people have periodontal disease. By the way, recognize that it's funny that they're trying to make an argument that COVID causes these things, but then at the same time, kind of subtly undermining their own argument. You know why? Because they know that we're going to look at this and go, well, duh, masks or any other things we're talking about. So they try to undermine it and go, well, periodontal disease. But then they swing back around later and go, oh, but here's a 12-year-old that's totally healthy that lost a tooth. Well, let's still pretend it has to do with either of those things. That's what, from their side of it, right? I definitely believe periodontal disease, gum disease plays a role here, and it's because of the masks. It says her son had normal and healthy teeth with no underlying disease, according to these orthodontists. So how does that make sense? It makes sense when you recognize that this is being caused, even in healthy people, because of the circumstances you're creating. Others in the Facebook group have posted about teeth falling out without bleeding. One woman lost a tooth while eating ice cream. We keep seeing how normal and everywhere these things are. It's Elaine of Luciano of Edison, New Jersey, had a top molar pop out in early November when she was flossing. And here's an interesting part as well. It says it's also possible that the widespread immune response, known as a cytokine storm, may be manifesting in the mouth. Well, that's a certainly interesting point when you consider the idea of how your body is reacting to all the things that are happening to it, including the vaccine, right? Because the vaccine plays a role in all of this. Because we don't know in what point any of these people could have gotten the vaccine, which would then create the things we've talked about as well. The immune response, the pathogenic priming, the antibody-dependent enhancement, the molecular mimicry. All these things are causing a reaction that basically turns your body on itself. So it's just an interesting add-on to that. But of course, nobody would argue this is only because of COVID-19, no matter the connections to anything else, and no matter the lack of evidence tying it to COVID-19. But going to the points that they were making, right, in regard to hair loss, toes, you'll find that you can find connections between the kind of things we're talking about. Severe hypoxia, meaning a lack of oxygen in your blood caused by the mask, can result in inflammatory reaction that leads to fibrosis of the scalp and progresses to permanent alopecia. That's a severe hypoxia given, but nonetheless, there's probably a lot of people that are wearing these things 8 hours a day. So the rare side effect of losing hair could be explained. Well, here's another one. COVID tongue is the newest COVID-19 symptom. It's funny how all these things seem to be happening in the mouth, right? Gee, I wonder why. Researchers have unveiled a potential new symptom of COVID-19, COVID tongue. A British researcher recently said that there have been more reported cases of people experiencing tongue discoloration, enlargement, and other mouth issues. Remember enlargement? We just talked about that. Swelling. Trouble swallowing, which is because of the tongue swelling. That's the same concept. And other mouth issues. Seeing increasing numbers of COVID tongues and strange mouth ulcers, you have a strange symptom or even just a headache and fatigue. Stay home. It must be COVID. A headache, fatigue, mouth sores. What the hell can... It's amazing that these doctors or people don't... The point is, if you brought on any honest dentist, they'd be like, yeah, duh, it's mask mouth. That's what's causing it. We all see it. But they can't seem to talk about it. I think there's an obvious that shows you something. But here's the image they want to show you about a tongue. Remember that. I have one that's a little grosser than that, but it's going to be relevant. Spector said that more than one, and that's in regard to COVID tongue. He said that more than one third of COVID patients, close to 35%, had bad non-classic symptoms in the first 3 days of infection. Now, could that be because it's some rare new thing, or could it be because that a lot of people are wearing masks? It's a good reminder, and understand that some of those people are being really and like naively compliant and doing it all the time in their car, in their house. And I've argued that's the 35%. The people that are wearing it when they go to the store and come home, probably not having the same problems. I still argue that you should not do it. It says it's a good reminder that there are so many different manifestations of this virus rather than just the classical ones. How is that a good reminder? Doesn't that seem to imply that there's things that are just being called COVID-19? there's just so many different things all over the place. It doesn't make any sense. And by the way, there was 100 different things that they threw out there that never stuck. There's a lot of weird claims about things in the beginning where the experts say this could be what's happening and then just ignored it because it didn't stick. Back in December, several experts identified a rare consequence of the novel coronavirus, your teeth falling out, as well as aggravated dental problems. And yeah, that's COVID-19, even though we can't find the connection. Like, they're reporting it as fact, but here they're pointing to the New York Times, which is the article we are pointing to, and even they made it sure to say that it was not absolute. They said, we don't know for sure, but as we keep showing you, here is mainstream saying that's the fact, because the New York Times got the ball rolling and called it COVID-19, but maybe, and then everybody everywhere, Fox and CNN, ABC, they all go, this is because COVID. That's all they do. They regurgitate. Dental problems, your teeth falling out, maybe it has to do with periodontal disease caused by a mask. Just a thought. Gum disease, periodontal disease, is very similar to hyperinflammatory reactions. Yeah, exactly. And COVID long haulers certainly fall into that category. Why? Because we're assuming those things are long haul, right? So it's a foregone conclusion. But there's nothing that connects what that is to COVID-19. It says, quote, COVID toes, and this is important, was another symptom that was reported back in April, which I wrote about for the Deseret News. These were explained as a presence of purple or blue lesions on a patient's feet or toes. I've never heard it be that specifically described, and I'm glad it was. You know why? Oh, actually, well, I'll jump to this one then, since I skipped the tongue. I'll come back to that. Kyanosis is one of the most common signs of hypoxia. The tips of the fingers and toes and bluish in color. Now, could that be what we're talking about? Maybe. But it does seem pretty interesting that literally everything they're pointing to can be described as hypoxia, hypercapnia, bacterial pneumonia, or periodontal disease or inflammation, which all of these things, like I said, are tying together. Now, back to this one, talking about COVID tongue. Well, swollen tongue is also in that category. A swollen tongue can result from infection, inflammation, not COVID, long haul, because we can't figure it out. It can also be caused by abnormal processes, you know, like wearing a mask on your mouth that covers your breathing all day long. But here is a picture of what oral thrush looks like. Weird. It's almost like it's the same thing. I wonder why they can't put that together. They must just not know how to research on Google, right? Sure. Or they want to tell you it's COVID-19 because they do not want to argue that it is something being caused by anything other than COVID-19. Or even the possibility that the thing that they're forcing on your face could cause any kind of complication. But look, I'm sorry to take a look at it. That's oral thrush. There is what they're telling you is COVID tongue. We're looking at problems caused by the mask. Infections in your mouth, which lead to periodontal disease, which lead to bacterial pneumonia, which lead to inflammation, which then lead to all kinds of chronic problems, then leading to systemic inflammation, which is exactly what we're talking about. Yeah, that's what it was there for. Now, coming full, you know, all the way to now, these are from the end of January. Trouble breathing, tooth loss. Some COVID-19 patients face lasting effects. We're still not, I mean, obviously, it's not that they're not recognizing it. They're choosing to ignore the obvious connection. Trouble breathing? Yeah, because they're walking around with masks on all day, every day. And now they're wearing more than one. And it is absolutely causing what the studies have shown it would cause. It's a no-brainer, as I keep saying, because the studies clearly showed you that these things, now this one's N95s compared to, or just N95s in general, which is supposed to be the best one you can wear, showing you that it is causing all the same things. It's causing lowered, where was it? I should have highlighted this beforehand, but I just grabbed them really quickly. Conclusion, breathing through N95 masks have shown to impede gaseous exchange, breathing, impose an additional workload on metabolic system of pregnant healthcare workers. Now, there's a lot of these that you could read. But they all will show you the same things. Wearing N95 masks for 4 hours during hemodialysis significantly reduced PaO2 and increased respiratory adverse effects. It talks about headaches. It talks about all kinds of things. A reduction in partial pressure of oxygen. I mean, it's very clear. Now, I mean, there might, I think there was, I think I closed the, anyway. Yeah, I'll grab it later. I'll try to include, you know, what am I talking about? All five of these are included in the links with every video that I show you, every single one. Where are we now? Let's get back to this. Right here. Here we go. This is the last one. Similar, it's just another website basically posting the exact same thing, a little different headline. This one is talking about lasting effects. Some COVID-19 patients face tooth loss, trouble breathing after recovery. But there's another point to this that we just talked about in regard to what they're calling MIS A or C, depending on adult or child, which I don't understand the differentiation, seeing as how it seems to apply to everybody. And the idea that we're talking about Kawasaki disease as if it's something different, despite that being the same thing. It's multi-system inflammatory disease. But here, what we just talked about was the possibility that this was also being caused by wearing masks. As we pointed out here, it says that the researchers suggest the disease may be caused by certain toxic substances called bacterial superantigens that are produced by particular types of bacteria, such as the two main things we're talking about here, strep and staph. Strep being the most obvious in your mouth that can lead to bacterial pneumonia, staph being a skin aspect, but that leading to, back to the point we made before, that's on your mask. The predominant isolated bacteria and fungi contaminated on the inside and the outside of used masks were similar. This right here, Staphylococcus. Okay, so that's on the inside and the outside of your mask that can go through it based on what the other studies we just showed you, showing you that it goes through 97% of the time with the vast majority of people wearing cloth masks. So recognize that this can get through and cause, as they're telling you right here, Kawasaki disease, or specifically multi-system inflammatory disease, which they're blaming on COVID-19 and saying it's with mostly children. But it says it may trigger an exaggerated response of the immune system. Oh, you mean like a cytokine storm or everything else you're talking about? Yes. It says infiltration of blood vessels, walls, and certain white blood cells. Kawasaki disease most frequently affects children 5 years or younger, but then when you start making people wear masks for 8 hours a day, suddenly you start seeing it happen in adults and everywhere else. That's the point. Which then this leads to inflammation throughout the entire body. Multi-system inflammatory disease. Now, whether that's what this is or not is something for you to ask. Oh, that's interesting. I forgot about this one, actually. I think I just accidentally closed a... No, I guess not. That's weird. I thought I lost one. Let me see. Oh, no, it's right there. Okay, so this was an interesting point that I forgot to say the other day. In regard to MISC, what is MRSA? Methicillin-resistant staphylococcus is a bacterium that causes infections in different parts of the body. It's tougher to treat than most strains of staph because it's resistant to some commonly used antibiotics. So this is the same thing we're talking about. The same staphylococcus we're talking about in regard to what causes, or what we're being told causes potentially MISC in children, is something that's been so common that it is actually resistant to antibiotics, meaning that it's not new, not special, or specifically not uncommon, at least. And now we're seemingly causing this with the mask, as causing that very dangerous staphylococcus that's immune to antibiotics to be pulled back into your system and causing these diseases. At the very least, that's possible. And on top of all of that, knowing that it's right there and on both sides of your mask and causing these, the point is that they're telling you that MISC, multi-system inflammatory syndrome, it says we don't know what causes it yet, despite continuing to tell you, even posting it as MISC and COVID-19, but we don't know what causes it. Do you not notice how they're leaning into what they want you to think? But then it goes on to say many children with MISC had the virus that causes COVID-19, but it says, or had simply been in contact or around somebody with COVID-19, which brings up the idea of how this could simply spread to somebody else. Remember, we're talking about oral thrush, which is simply a similar concept of having the mask create the circumstances in your mouth that causes the strep to, or rather, strep and other things, strep causing bacterial pneumonia, other ones causing yeast infections in your mouth, which causes something that can be passed, right? So imagine you're kissing somebody, And they transmit their oral thrush infection to you because they had a mask on all day, every day. And then that causes you to create that infection, which you breathe in and cause breathe in step strep and cause a bacterial pneumonia infection. Then you've got symptoms like loss of taste, all the things we just talked about, which then gets called COVID-19. On the other side of that, we're talking about MISC and how children, they're telling you, are able to somehow spread this without actually having COVID or just being around somebody that has it or what they're calling COVID-19. So you begin to see this interesting pattern of these same bacterial issues being able to be spread. So is that what we're staring at? Is that what is actually being spread around and dealing with pneumonias and flus that are just kind of being broadly dumped under one category, which we are seeing? It's certainly a question we should be asking, as all of this stuff seems to lead to this very clear discussion that there's much more happening here, and everything that they're telling you in regard to how it has to be COVID is based on their opinion, their assumption, whereas everything I'm pointing to is based on science. It's based on the connections between real-world situations that we already know about, not guessing based on what these experts were told are experts, even though they seem to be challenged by the rest of the world of experts, tell you. It's very frustrating. But there's so much more to this conversation. At the end of the day, it is a no-brainer to me that what you're being told to wear on your face is creating illness. Whether that illness is leading to larger problems being called COVID is something you should think about. And whether or not they're leading to systemic inflammation, which is leading to some of the most leading causes of death in the country, and whether that could literally be the cause of all the numbers we're being told are COVID-19. Or, at the very least, adding to it, and we're really not as much danger as we're being told, which, by the way, the data supports. Their own information supports. It's quite incredible. But to wrap this up on one more point before we finish off with a couple of notes, there's another side of this discussion that is very important, that is not, that is not necessarily connected in the same way. Now, there's a lot of discussions around this next topic that is very that is, people take this, and this goes with everything we've talked about, by the way, whether we're talking about masks or anything else, where there's a lot of false certainty out there, where people are saying, we know this is the case. And today, in regard to, let's say, bacterial pneumonia, that I'm certain in that regard. But you shouldn't just listen to me. You should do your research and come to your own conclusions. But in regard to something like 5G, there's been a lot of hyperbolic discussion, a lot of over-the-top claims and assumptions that don't necessarily connect. Doesn't mean they're not true. But in regard to the larger topic here, not necessarily about 5G causing what we're talking about here in regard to coronavirus. In fact, it's not really what we're talking about. We're talking about inflammation. So can 5G cause inflammation in your body? Well, that seems to be a yes. And so when you recognize that that's possible, the only thing you should be asking is whether there are multiple factors in our world right now that are causing illness or problems in your body that are then being kind of gathered together and called COVID-19. This is something we talked about in the very beginning of all this. It seems much more likely there's a large convergence of events, a long history of chemicals in your water, chemicals in your air, chemicals in your food, or industrial disease or pollution, all these things sort of converging and creating this perfect storm of problems. So when we now going into this next part, think about the concept of exactly that, of inflammation. And just recognizing that 5G can lead to inflammation, or rather what these studies suggest, could that, combined with everything else, lead to a massive influx of inflammation in people suffering from all of the things they're being told to do? It's a very logical question. Here's what this has to say. Now, this is another study, page 7, let me make sure I don't lose my spot, called Effects of 5G Wireless Communication on Human Health. And this is from the European Parliament. Right, so it's just this discussion is very quickly dismissed and called fake news. So just remember, this is directly from the European Parliament. Here's what it says. Get down to 7 again. Okay, 2018 review of more recently published peer-reviewed articles. So you see where I am on the biological and health effects of radio frequency EMF, including 5G. Also verifies the available evidence on the effects of millimeter waves. So just remember, these are peer-reviewed articles. The review concludes that evidence on the biological properties of radio frequency EMF are accumulating progressively, and even though they are in some cases still preliminary or controversial, point to the existence of multi-level interactions between high-frequency EMF and biological systems, and to the possibility of oncological and non-oncological, mainly reproductive, metabolic, neurological, microbiological effects. Oncological, I mean, you know, they could cause cancer. Moreover, it points out that the wide and increasing density of wireless devices and antennas raises particular concerns. Taking this into account, although the biological effects of 5G communication systems are very scarcely investigated, right? We're not supposed to say that out loud, but that's the truth, by the way. An international action plan for the development of 5G networks has started. With a, basically what they just said is, despite no research really, they're going forward anyway, with a forthcoming increase in devices and density of small cells, and with the future of millimeter waves. However, there are indications that millimeter waves can increase skin and temperature, promote cellular proliferation like cancer, and inflammatory and metabolic processes. Well, that's really interesting. That is the European Parliament in a 2018 review straight up telling you that this, their research indicates this can cause inflammation and cancer in your body. Add that to the possibility that inflammation seems to be the focal point of what's happening here. Here's another one. Towards 5G communication systems, are there health implications? This says, preliminary observations showed, and by the way, just remembering this right now, I want to make sure I include this. Derek has, writing it down, Derek has done some unbelievable work on 5G. Very objective, just looking at the science, is despite how you guessed it, he gets called conspiracy theorist for literally looking at the science and pointing out that they haven't done enough research. As they admit they haven't done enough research, it's just pathetic how willing they are to pretend that what you're saying is fake news while it is literally what they are in fact doing. Preliminary observations showed that MMW increased skin temperature, alter gene expression, promote cellular proliferation, and synthesis of proteins linked with oxidative stress, inflammatory and metabolic processes, could generate ocular damages, affect neuromuscular dynamics. Inflammation is the only point I'm going for in this discussion, but gene expression and cellular proliferation, these things are alarming. And in case you don't know, this is not a secret. 5G is an active, this is rolling out around the world. 5G is a necessary part to the success of the Great Reset, to the success of the whole push of the Internet of Things. It's not a secret. I mean, one of the most watched videos that I've ever done was in regard to Donald Trump passing legislation during COVID-19, whatever the event. Nobody talked about it. And I just simply said, Donald Trump quietly passing 5G legislation under the cover of COVID-19. It had over 1 million views. I mean, for a channel with just 100,000 subscribers at the time, which they deleted, that's incredible. That went viral. That went around the world. And why? Because people were shocked that he was passing 5G, one, and that it was happening quietly under COVID-19. And they deleted it and said that I was trying to claim that COVID-19 was caused by 5G. Didn't happen. That video is still on BitChute and everywhere else. So it is embarrassingly pathetic how clearly they don't even look at what they're trying to censor. It's because they just want to sell their narrative. But the point is that this is rolling out. It's all over the place. And so if it can cause inflammation, it's relevant to what we're talking about. Despite that, I guarantee this will be dismissed as some kind of 5G coronavirus video. That's not to say that you shouldn't look into those points. There's a lot there that is very interesting. But I go back to the point that Derek has gone over just 5G and its dangers in extensively. And you owe it to yourself to look at that information. Here's another one. Extremely low frequency electromagnetic field exposure enhances inflammatory response. In the present study, the effects of 60 gigahertz, 0.8 MT, extremely low frequency electromagnetic fields, ELF or EMF, dash EMF, on a macrophage cell line, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, were examined. Under defined ELF EMF exposure conditions, the production of nitric oxide and pro-inflammatory cytokines, that's interesting, were increased in raw 264.7 cells. In the expression of those genes was also upregulated. But it says ELF, EMF was associated with higher inflammatory responses, and these suggest that the ELF, EMF amplifies inflammatory responses and can decrease the effectiveness of antioxidants. Well, that's pretty interesting. In any case, Are we still quibbling about whether or not this can cause inflammation? It seems pretty clear. Now, the final point on this end is this discussion, which I think even from my end was largely misunderstood. It seems at the very least that 5G, or specifically 60 gigahertz, interacts in an alarming way with oxygen absorption in particular. But as I've become to understood that this is not necessarily that it specifically affects the lungs, the oxygen in your lungs, but I'm open to more perspectives on this. So anybody out there that feels that that's incorrect, reach out to me. But at the same time, the idea that this interacts with oxygen at all seems quite relevant to the idea of discussions of oxygen in general. But at the end of the day, this is just one more aspect of discussion that you should be willing to ask. Is this adding to inflammation in my body? Or will it? Can it? Will this be the next part that surges the next thing that we call something else? In any case, the answer is yes, this can cause inflammation according to the studies from the very people that we're supposed to be listening to. Now, to bring this to the end of the mask part, just to make sure you understand that we just talked about all the other things in regard to inflammation in your body, bacterial pneumonia, oral thrush, that a mask can cause different things that are leading to problems. But on top of that, I didn't go into it that much today because I've done entire shows on it before. One of them called The Great Mask Deception discusses that the masks aren't even effective the way that they say they are anyway. And this is extensive. Updated as well from January. And I just pointed this out. And it's incredible that this is a compilation of the studies and the science that they will ignore. I just showed you an embarrassing article where they actually pretended there was no random controlled trials like this one in regard to cloth masks. You're staring at it. But the point about this is that these are all the main studies from the very people that you're told to listen to, finding exactly what I'm saying. And all they can do is point to some new computer model that they did yesterday, as if that's the all said and done. It's over. As somebody just pointed out the other day, anybody that says science is settled is not talking about science. They're talking about marketing. Good point. Because science is never settled. Scientists know that. But so far, most studies have found little to no evidence of the effectiveness of cloth masks in general population, neither as personal protection equipment nor as source control, right? This is the one I always point out, May 2020, the CDC. You've seen that one. A Danish random controlled trial in regard to these masks, which finds the same thing. Oxford, University of East Anglia, University of Illinois, New England Journal of Medicine. All these are finding the same thing, coming to the conclusion that cloth face masks have little to no protection. Cochrane Review, Norwich School of Medicine, BMJ, German professor, as well as the fact that the mask requirements seem to then be followed by a dramatic increase. I mean, it's why? Because look, guys, the masks are what are causing, in my opinion, these, at the very least, adding on to what was happening, possibly causing all of it, but adding on at the very least to what's happening, which is why you then see the spike after most all of them. Pretty interesting. Now, it also goes on to talk about all sorts of other important stuff. Now, I actually deleted this because I didn't think it was meaningless, but there was a video from the Weather Channel showing you a guy wearing two masks and showing you how it worked. Why? Because you can see the fog coming out behind him while the wind is blowing at him. It's really well done. But here's the point, is this is a PhD telling you in the same way.
Without further ado, let's cut to the chase and take a look at an ordinary.
So, showing you the same thing, right? I mean, the idea is regardless, you could put on 15 masks. It will come out the sides of the mask and it will go around your head, which is the point. So it will spread around your head and make this thing more. The whole point, as we pointed out before, is your nose and your mouth, the way it's designed is you breathe away and down from yourself. But you wear the mask and all it does is create the situation to make it float and stay around your face, as well as those that come around you. So it's not protecting your grandma. It's not protecting you. It's not doing any of that stuff. As well as the fact that it's gathering that bacteria on the mask on both sides, which you then can pull into your mouth and your lungs and cause all the things we just talked about. But I hope, as always, you will go through and look at this extensive study and continually updating study that shows you all the things we're talking about from the Swiss policy research. And it's painful how people don't want to see the reality. Now, to finish off, Biden's next fight, anti-vaxxers jeopardize plans to protect U.S. against COVID. This is from February 9th. And this is on the Wayback Machine. I forget why I have it on here, but it's still up, I believe. But it says just under half of adults in the U.S. said in December they were very likely to get vaccinated. Just under half. So even then, the point is that half this country doesn't want this thing. So is this a democracy? Apparently not. Right? I mean, we know that already. I'm just being joking. But the idea is that they pretend like that's the case, but they keep telling you that most of us don't want this and yet pretend like we're doing something wrong. We're in trouble. We're the illusion we're told is we're in control. They are supposed to be doing what we want as a populace, as a population, as a majority. That's democracy, right? So if more than half of people don't want it, how are they acting like we're the ones doing something wrong? Because you're not actually in control. I don't know why that's not clear by now. The government doesn't care about you or what you want. They pretend they care about what you want only a couple times a year to make sure that you keep thinking that. That's up from 39.4% of adults surveyed in September. So even then, back in less than 40% didn't wanted this thing, and still they acted like we were the ones doing something wrong. That could potentially jeopardize U.S. vaccination efforts. To control the pandemic, which has overwhelmed hospitals, that's actually not true, and taken more than 466,000 American lives, which, by the way, is aggressively bloated by the PCR test with a potentially 95% false positive rate, according to Dr. Scoglio, PhD, and numerous other, including other PhDs, by the way, as well as combining flu and pneumonia, as well as a number of other things. But on top of that, we are at a point right now where we're already seeing a dramatic decrease in the cases and deaths and everything. So why are they still pushing the vaccine? Because there's something much more. They're going to now argue that it's because it's going to come back. And if we don't do the vaccine, it's just going to come back. That's what will happen either way. That's my opinion, because that's what the plan is, in my opinion. But why do you push this if we're supposedly already going down? It's because it's about the vaccine. That's why. Wendy Borger tested positive for COVID-19 at an urgent care center in Palmerton, Pennsylvania, on December 28th. She said she was fatigued, short of breath, had a headache. Sound familiar? Heart palpitations, fever. Her oxygen level dipped to 94%. Literally every single one of those things are caused by all the things we just talked about. Every one of them. Borger, who is 50 and suffers from chronic bronchitis, which only makes it more likely, by the way, that that's going to happen to her, said her lungs felt like a weapon when she walked down the stairs or even had a shower. She's wearing a mask, probably causing these things to herself and causing her so that she probably has low blood oxygen levels. She probably has bacterial pneumonia, probably has all these things. Do I know that for sure? No. But neither do they, when all they're saying is that she got a PCR test that is not suited for this, that has a huge false positive rate, and then the symptoms, which can be caused by the things we're talking about. And nothing else? It took almost 2 weeks before it didn't hurt to breathe, she said. It's been more than a month since her diagnosis, and she still isn't fully recovered. That is not COVID-19. You know why it hasn't fully recovered? Because she's still wearing a mask, and she's still keeping herself in this state where her body is struggling. That's why she feels that way. By the way, she still won't get a COVID-19 vaccine. So that's an important point, because it's not the vaccine. She is dealing with what they're doing to everybody. It says, even though clinical trial data shows Pfizer and Moderna's vaccines are safe and effective, that's not true, just under half of adults in the U.S. surveyed in December said they were very likely to get it. Again, so why are we being told that we're wrong if more than half of this country doesn't want it? But here's the point on this. Clinical trials shows this, that it's highly safe and effective. That's actually not even true. It shows you that at the very least, according to their own data, that it's 95% effective about lessening symptoms and the mild symptoms. So how in the world is that highly effective? That's a deception. That's a shell game. It says they could potentially jeopardize U.S. vaccination efforts. And that's the point. So it's not about you being safe or making sure we're there. It's not about threatening. See, it's funny how they frame it, right? You're supposed to think, well, because the vaccination efforts are doing something good for us. But they didn't say this could potentially jeopardize the safety of Americans. They said it could jeopardize the U.S. vaccination effort, because that's what they actually care about. It says, under herd immunity, the goal, according to Biden's chief medical advisor, Dr. Anthony Fauci, is to vaccinate between 70 and 85%, or roughly 232 million Americans. Now, I want us to remember here, this has never happened before. There's never been a time where they have tried to mass inoculate everybody in the country at the same time. There's flu discussions where they say you should get this, or certain times in the past where they've pushed it on healthcare workers or things like that. But never before have we said, we're going to vaccinate literally everybody who's not sick. That's crazy. And that is what most any honest doctor is pointing out. That is unprecedented, and it's alarming because this is making sure that the side effects we already had is are going to be more widespread anyway. Then you add on it's this experimental rushed injection that has never been done before, that has a lot of obviously different side effects, and you add that onto it. And they're trying to achieve herd immunity and surpass the pandemic with something that won't stop transmission. Anybody want to explain that to me? If you can catch this and you can still spread it, how in the world is that going to cause herd immunity? It won't. The whole idea is that it stops it. But if you're still spreading around, it won't stop. What am I missing? Remember that if you can still catch it too. So you can get the vaccine, then still catch it, then still spread it to somebody else. What's the point? It lessens your mild symptoms, or so you're told, right? I mean, if you get it and you don't really get sick, you're going to go, oh, it's because of the vaccine. Well, maybe not. Maybe you just wasn't that bad. Maybe it was never going to be that bad. This doesn't stop the spreading or from catching, so it doesn't stop herd immunity. It is all a big shell game of illusions, and they know that. They're just playing on the ignorant people that know that have been taught that they have to blindly trust authority, and the ones that don't are the crazy, dangerous, scary ones. To be sure, it says, the rollout has been slow going. County websites have been overloaded by people who desperately want to be immunized, and manufacturing isn't fully ramped up, but that's not true. It's so embarrassing how they keep trying to make this claim because they desperately don't want you to see that. I mean, they just told you that half Americans don't want this, but then followed up by going, people are desperate to get it. Can you not tell that they have a marching order here? It's really embarrassing. It's clear what's going on. It's not infrastructure. It's not manufacturing. They let it slip more than once that they were ready to distribute more, and they were just waiting for the go-ahead from the U.S. government. They want you to think that it's manufacturing or infrastructure, so you don't think that Americans don't want this thing. They want you to think people are desperate and we just can't get it out in time. It says, but the one thing that time and money can't as easily solve is persuading people to take it. Exactly. Some of the vaccines are still sitting on the shelves because very real vaccine hesitancy that does exist in certain communities. Okay, so what is it? Are they desperately waiting? You don't have enough? Or are some still sitting on the shelves? You can't follow it up with the same, I mean, of course they can, and they do. It says nationally about 60% of employees at long-term health facilities who were offered the shots said no. 60% of health employees in the country said they didn't want this thing. But it's us, but we're crazy though, right? 60% of healthcare facility employees who are working with, that are in the healthcare business said no to this thing, but we're conspiracy theorists. But we're the ones that are wrong when half the country doesn't want it. Do you see what's happening here? Clearly, it's the government that wants this, and they're pushing it on people and a populace that doesn't want it, a majority that doesn't want it. That's not democracy. That's a dictator. It says, in New York City, some 30% of healthcare workers eligible for the vaccine refused to get it too. That's just in New York. Former President Obama has said the Tuskegee study still lingers as a painful memory. Yeah, a little more than that, Obama. Talk about downplaying something serious. As a painful memory that's led to vaccine skepticism, and rightly so, in black and brown communities. Researchers who conducted the infamous study from 1932 to 1972 gave black men with syphilis placebos instead of penicillin, so government researchers could study the long-term effects of the disease. Guess what? That's a flat-out lie. What they did was get them sick with syphilis so they could study them. But even now, they can't be honest about what this really was. CNBC, good job. Great journalism. So we can clearly go and find out the information. This is a great article from V for Vapid. I've mentioned him in the past. He does amazing deep dive research. This is called Ethically Impossible. Tuskegee Human Experiments Exported to Guatemala. WikiLeaks archives, so you can be quite sure that these things are accurate. You can look it up for yourselves because they are. The idea here is that this not only was this were supposedly stopped in the 70s, but did it though, or was it just simply continued elsewhere around the world in places where they knew they wouldn't be caught? Showing you that the eugenics and the manipulation and human experimentation is not just a problem in this. It is a policy of this government. It always has been. That's why they bring over people like the Nazi scientists and bring over people like Dr. Ishii from Japan, who were doing the worst of the worst of the worst, experimenting on live human subjects with all kinds of horrific things. And that's what we were telling people and why we need to stop these terrible bad guys. And then we brought them on our side because that's what good guys do. keep doing the bad things we claim we wanted to stop. But it says, in the commission's view, the Guatemala experiments involved unconscionable violations of ethics. Their failure to exercise moral leadership cannot be excused, and their failures led to practices that were so wrong as to be fairly characterized as heinous. It says, Presidential Commission for the Study of Bioethical Issues, 2011. Now it says, and I really recommend you read this whole thing because it is some incredible stuff. Under ethically impossible, yet happened all the same, the abhorrent Tuskegee experiments conducted by the U.S. government from 1935 to 1972 were not confined to the United States. They were exported abroad. The secret medical experiments were extended to the Central American nation in the midst of revolution, right? Remember the time when we were talking about, you know, they were doing things like fighting for fruit companies with your tax dollars and murdering people in your name because they didn't have the internet and the media that would care to report it for you, right? They were overthrowing countries left and right in South America. And while that was happening, experimenting on human subjects without their knowledge, because that's what good democracies do. In the midst of the revolution, where the rule of law is often tenuous and sometimes non-existent, the place was Guatemala. Innocent civilians were selected to continue the appalling practice of secretly infecting human subjects with syphilis and gonorrhea without their knowledge nor their consent. Victims such as Frederico Ramos, now well into his 90s, and his family have quietly suffered the agony of untreated venereal disease for decades. In 1948, Ramos was a low-ranking soldier in the Guatemalan army with little choice but to heed the orders of his commanding officers and present himself to a medical clinic operated by U.S. doctors. Thousands more Guatemalans were subject to infections at the hands of U.S. medical officials from 1946 to 1948. All this you guys can look up for yourselves. Under the supervision of Dr. John Cutler and his research, and by the way, all the links and sources are here for you on this as he always does. Dr. John Cutler and his research team from Public Health Service, PHS, and co-sponsored by, guess who, the NIH, and the agency would later be integrated under the umbrella of the CDC. Funny how all the same people are involved all the way back then are currently involved with what I would argue is another experiment now. It is estimated that from approximately 1,500 to 5,500 Guatemalans involuntarily became subjects of human experimentation. The Tuskegee experiments, also known as the Tuskegee Syphilis Study, describes research carried out by the U.S. government of untreated syphilis in African-American males. Hundreds of African-Americans were purposefully infected with syphilis, but were told they were receiving free health care from the U.S. government. So, I mean, think about how heinous, the word they used, heinous that is. How absolutely despicable that not only are you experimenting on people without their knowledge, but you're saying, come on over and we'll even help you. We're going to give you health care at a time when it was needed and then make them more sick. Like, think about what that means to what we're dealing with today. Come and take this thing that we're going to give you to make you better. You have every reason to doubt what they're doing. Astoundingly, the secret Tuskegee experiments spanned for decades in the United States. Medical researchers observed and logged the condition of African-American subjects to untreated syphilis for over 30 years without their knowledge. Many of the very same medical experts, scientists, and government officials involved in the Tuskegee syphilis study are also directly linked to the Guatemalan STD experiments. Prominent members of the U.S. medical establishment from the PHS, NIH, and the Venereal Disease Research Laboratory oversaw Dr. Cutler's secret research. In collaboration with doctors from Johns Hopkins University, and the Rockefeller Foundation, what do you know? CDC, NIH, Johns Hopkins, Rockefeller. Interesting how it's the same people. In 2010, the Obama administration launched an inquiry into the revelations. He commissioned a bioethics committee to investigate and substantiate the claims. The findings of the 9-month and 201-page report, that's funny, you know, that 201 and all, not that that means anything, I just think that's interesting, report on the Guatemalan STD experiments carried out by PHS and the Venereal Disease Research Laboratories, medical scientists were damning and blunt. The name of the report, Ethically Impossible. I think that was all I went over. There's a lot more in here that you really should look at. It's just crazy how clear it is that we are they only care when they're caught. And it's always been that way. I mean, if you can't recognize that they were caught doing things in places like Bolivia or Syria, and only even barely, if that, admitted it once they were caught, these are the same people we're talking about, the same government that they've always been doing stuff like this. And they've hid it, they've covered it up, like Clapper pretending that they weren't spying on the NSA on your phone calls until they were forced to admit it, and he was never held accountable. Like, it's a clear track record of doing whatever the hell they want, abusing you and everything about you until they get caught, and then they just pass a law that makes what they just did legal, sort of like the Patriot Act, sort of like a lot of different things. This is disgusting, obvious history of why we should not trust what's happening. And at the very least, not be swayed by some claim that it's better for society when these people don't care about society. Human experiments, first, do no harm. This is a Nature article that they reference in that shows you this. It's just very clear. This stuff is not a secret. Now, on the end of that, I want to make sure you remember the idea that the U.S. Army, your government, has admitted to conducting 239 experiments on unwitting individuals. The U.S. Army has admitted that it secretly conducted at least 239 germ warfare tests in locations across the country targeting unsuspecting Americans. In 1977, the U.S. Army admitted that it secretly conducted at least 239 germ warfare tests in the open air in cities across the country between 1949 and 1967. Funny, it's the same time frame. So while they're testing on African Americans with syphilis, they're also testing on just anybody everywhere across the country with all kinds of weird germs for your best interest? Sure, I'm sure they'll tell you that. Does it sound like it's for your best interest? Well, maybe if we stand back and say, well, it's for the broad interest of the country, because even though people died when we tested on unwitting Americans, now we know how to defend against those bad Russians. That sound familiar? It should, because that's always what they've said. Despite how it never seems to amount to that, it only seems to amount to things against you, things they take from you, things that they control in your life. That's always what this seems to amount to. It says the areas where the lethal germs were simulated on the public were typically in major cities such as Washington, D.C., San Francisco, New York, Key West, Panama City, according to an Army report submitted to the Senate Health Subcommittee. So it's not fake news. The Army insisted that the purpose of the test was to study how biological warfare affects in the public, in case it needs to defend against it. Okay, so it's essential, they said, to test it on you and maybe kill you to make sure we can defend against bad guys. And that actually, and seemingly that was okay. Nothing happened. They're still doing it now. They did it then. According to the report from the Washington Post, the release of the Army's censored report was the most complete official version of the nation's biological warfare effort, which, by the way, never stopped. They just call it defense now. And it revealed that in addition to public areas, military personnel and their families were also targeted. Before I read the quote, think about the idea that your defense department used to be called the Department of War. Did they change what they did? Not at all. They still conduct war. The point is they just didn't want to call it that anymore. So when they call this a defense program for biological research, recognizes the same trope, the same nonsense. It is a biological warfare program disguised as defense, as they make vaccines, as they make weapons. When really I argue they're probably both. Or rather, they're both weapons in regard to what they're doing, as far as and that's my opinion, but clearly backed up by long history of these problems, and the fact that we're staring at the discussion of them using these things to test on people. It says, quote, the Army listed 27 times that it tested simulated toxins on public property, including releasing spores in two tunnels in a stretch of Pennsylvania Turnpike. That's incredible. In addition to these experiments in public places, the Army Secretary used military personnel and their families for open-air experiments by spraying simulated germs into the air at a number of bases, including Fort Detrick. What do you know? Fort Belvoir and the main training school at Quantico. Another 504 workers connected with biological warfare activities at Fort Detrick, Dugway Proving Ground, and the Desert Test Center in Utah, and the Pine Bluff Arsenal in Arkansas suffered infections, according to the Army's count. So they poisoned people with, they attacked them with biological weapons, is what happened. And that's okay. Now, what's interesting, according to them, because it just nothing really happened. What's interesting, though, is they say, oh, well, that was between those two dates. But the point is, what happened after that? Yeah, the Tuskegee experiments moved somewhere else. But what happened after 1972? Did it stop? Did MKUltra stop when they told you it stopped? No, it didn't. That's a fact. They said, no, we stopped that. And there's clear evidence it went on for at least another 10 years. Or I think it was 10 years, but more after that. The point is, in my opinion, it's still happening now. So are they still testing on us? Did it actually stop? Well, that's a question you need to ask yourself. Because right now, it's never been as easy to see that that's possible. Children's Health Defense, 653 deaths, 12,044 injuries reported following COVID vaccines, according to Veyers. And remember that Veyers, at best, has about 1% of what's happening. And that's almost unbelievable to think about. So thank you for taking the time today to actually stick this out, listen, and engage with the information. Because you know what? I really, truly believe, and I mean like to the core of my being, that this is an obvious deception that that plenty of people, including in the mainstream media, are very aware of. I just don't know how you can't see this. I mean, it's so very obvious. And they're gaslighting you like crazy. The only thing I can consider, how can they gaslight you for something so obvious if they don't see what you're doing, if they don't see what's actually happening? It's one of those things that should just jolt people free from that machine. Every day there's something like this, and we just need to keep grabbing it, harnessing it, and showing to these people that just don't want to listen. 2 hours is not so bad, but I get it that people have a hard time watching longer shows. But as I said, I have clips that are being made for me now, actually from multiple people, but Brock West being one of them, making these clips for me. He just made a couple from the last show I did on Sunday, which I'm probably going to be posting tomorrow. But there will be more clips coming out. So feel free and reach out to me and say, Ryan, that show you just did, that segment you did, make that a clip. That was the best one I've ever seen. Reach out to me. Send me a tweet to my account, which you all should know by now. Oh, actually, here, I have to move it over here. Send me a tweet. Send me a message. Follow me on Twitter. Send me an email. Make sure you tell me what's going on and say, Ryan, that tweet. Oh, here, I didn't show it. Sorry. This one. Follow me on Twitter. And tell me which ones you want me to make into clips, because I will do so, and we'll make sure this information gets out as fast as we possibly can. But thank you again for being here and asking questions and continuing to push back, because it's never been more important. I truly love you guys. Thank you for being here. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
What if the experts are wrong? What if quarantining the healthy doesn't actually save lives? What if wearing a mask in public is not effective?
If you do not have a mask, you cannot ride public transportation, sir.
My name is Dr. Jeff Barkey, and I'm here representing thousands of physicians across the country whose voices are being silenced because we don't agree with the mainstream media and the experts who are telling us what to do.
Everything I've seen in the last 9 days, all the things that just don't make sense, the patients I'm seeing in front of me, the lungs I'm trying to improve, have led me to believe that COVID-19 is not this disease, and that we are operating under a medical paradigm that is untrue.
Never in the history of this great republic have we quarantined the healthy. Never in the history of this great republic have we told churchgoers that it's illegal for you to exercise your First Amendment right of freedom of religion. Never in the history of this country have we been told that you can't go to church because it's non-essential, but you can go get an abortion because that's essential. Never before in our country have we let criminals out of jail, but we've told you you can't exercise your Second Amendment right and protect yourself by purchasing a firearm. Yeah! When liquor stores are deemed essential, but your businesses are deemed non-essential, there's something wrong going on.
We cut off people's utilities this week and made them pay what could have been their last check to us to turn their lights on in a global health pandemic. But you don't care about that. You didn't want to meet.
This booklet, the Declaration of Independence and our U.S. Constitution, was never designed to restrain the people. It was designed to restrain the government. We're realizing that the fatality rate of this virus is in the ballpark of a bad seasonal influenza. Do not let your voices be silenced. We will see eventually that this government-imposed cure is going to be worse than the virus itself. But what's happening now as unemployment reaches 20 to 30 million people is those folks are now becoming dependent on the government. And what government dependency causes is a larger, more tyrannical government.
Look, he ain't even do nothing. He ain't even do nothing.
We the people want to put our government back in its place. We want a small representative government, not a large tyrannical government. I'm here representing thousands of physicians around the country whose voices must be heard.
We've never seen where we quarantine the healthy, where you take those without disease and without symptoms and lock them in your home.
So you guys are asking me to leave the store for not wearing a mask when I have a medical condition, even though yours is pulled under your nose.
There's a note that says
I don't have to bring a note, and yours isn't even on.
You just do whatever you want to do.
It's America, right?
Listen. Get out.
I cannot wear a mask.
Get out.
Do not let your voices be silenced.